You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. What a concept, huh? If you would like to join me today, the number in the studio is 323. I say that automatically. The studio is my house now, but I still say it automatically. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. Feel free to call what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. And if you are on Instagram and you want to drop a comment, I'm also live streaming there. Feel free to drop a comment and I will answer your questions or respond to your comment, as long as they are nice. Okay, so, you know, a lot of people are trying really hard. They're trying to stop binging. They're trying to stop eating junk. They're trying to stop sitting on the couch so much and start getting outside and exercise. They're trying to stop being so critical of themselves. They're trying to stop whatever. Maybe they're trying too hard. And if this is you, maybe you're trying too hard too. So if you ever saw the original Star Wars, you know I'm a big Star Wars geek. The original Star Wars, there is a famous scene in the Empire Strikes Back where Luke Skywalker first meets Yoda. So Luke's fighter plane has been stuck in this mucky muck stuff, and he has to move the plane, and it is impossible. It's like totally stuck. So he tells Yoda, he's going to give it a try. Josh, hold that thought. I just got to finish my Star Wars story. So Yoda says, and I will spare you the Yoda impression because do it, I cannot. Sorry, couldn't help myself. Yoda says, try not, do or do not. There is no try. Okay, so I'm going to get back to this in a little later.
Hey, Dr. Nina. I want to know about, let's say you're just, you're a little overweight, or you're a little underweight, but I think for me, it would be a little overweight. And then I would say, how do you know if you just need to get out and exercise, or how do you know if it's emotional, and why does it seem so difficult to sort of just get completely healthy when you're so close to being there?
Okay, so those are a lot of questions in one, and I'm going to answer all of them. So first of all, how do you know if you're emotional eating? Well, if, for example, we know that with emotional eating, with my food mood formula, anything crunchy, chips, pretzels, crackers, whatever, popcorn, that's associated with, for example, some form of anger, frustration, annoyance. If you are just eating some chips with your sandwich, that is not the same as having a whole bunch of crackers or chips or whatever and hating yourself with every bite. So how you know whether you are emotional eating, which is kind of a broad term, but if you are feeling a pull toward food to resolve something internal, to feel better, to escape, to numb, to comfort, to distract, to reward even, then that is the difference between just eating whatever and eating for like emotionally based reasons. So that, does that clarify that?
Yeah, I think it does. My follow-up question would be, let's say we already know we have some emotional issues going on and we're overweight and we think possibly eating issues, would there necessarily be a connection between our ongoing emotional stuff and our eating, or could it be something entirely other emotional, if that makes any sense?
Well, you're not eating, you're not emotional because of what you're eating. You're emotional because of what's going on in your life. So if you have a fight with your partner, or you get fired by your boss, or you have some disappointment in your life and you don't know how to cope with that, often we tell ourselves in this culture of toxic positivity, we tell ourselves, or people tell us, oh, everything happens for a reason. It's going to work out for the best. You'll see. It's going to be okay. And we never process the emotions. So what happens to them? If you're sad, you're pointed in yourself for eating. You might eat to just escape anything that's going on inside. You might get angry at yourself for eating because you don't want to get angry at someone else. So you can't separate like being upset with yourself for eating with being upset. Like that's the displacement. One of your questions in your multifaceted question earlier was, what happens if you get within reach of your goal, but you can't somehow seem to get there? And actually, one of the things I'm going to talk about in a little bit is, how do you deal with fear of failure, fear of success? If you either can't quite reach it or you can't stay there, something is going on. And recognizing what that thing is, what that conflict is very important. I know you've heard me talk about fear of happiness, and that's a really prevalent one. And of course, whenever I bring it up, people are like, what are you talking about? Of course I want to be happy. What are you, crazy? Are you crazy, Dr. Nina? I want to be happy. Yeah. Consciously, you want to be happy, but often people are afraid to be happy because they think the other shoe will drop. As soon as something good happens, something bad will happen, or they don't deserve it, or they feel too guilty. Something's going on. So one way that you can be assured of never being quote unquote too happy is to feel bad about your weight or what you're eating and all of that. So okay. That means there's something going on psychologically.
Right. So it could be a fear of success. And the fear of success is unconscious. And that would be the main hurdle for me losing the last 5 pounds or whatever, 10 pounds it is. And I would assume that it is emotional eating, but it could be just I need to go and exercise. And that was another part of my question. You know, I guess it's different if someone's restricting, you just tell them go and eat, but that can't be what it is. You can't really just tell someone to go and exercise, or can you?
Josh, you're focusing too much on behavior and not enough on, well, why do you feel like you can't go and exercise? By the way, exercise, when it comes to weight loss, exercise is just a small part of it. Most of it is what we eat. If you are doing something you don't want to do or not doing something you want to do, there's always a reason. So a lot depends on your relationship to the thing. If you feel like feeling like overeating versus binging. Overeating is, I just, you know, I ate a little bit too much of that. It was so good I couldn't stop. Oh, well, I'll just work out tomorrow a little more. Or I just, you know, I'll just take it easy tomorrow and eat a salad or something, right? It's benign. When we overeat, we just go, okay, hey, it was good. I'll just take it easy tomorrow. Or maybe not even that. We don't feel bad about ourselves. But binge eating or emotional eating and conflict eating, that makes us feel bad about ourselves. So overeating is, I had a little bit too much. Oh, well. Problematic conflict eating is, I had too much and now I hate myself and what's wrong with me and I'm disgusting. And you start, you know, attacking yourself.
So, right. And then we would still think that there was an emotional reason to be eating in the first place that has nothing to do with any shame feelings?
Look, there are many, many emotions. Loneliness, the answer to loneliness is, of course, to be with other people in a meaningful way. We can feel lonely in a group of people too. That's the worst kind of loneliness. But when you use food to resolve loneliness, that means filling the food and eating a lot of calorically fill the emptiness of loneliness. So when we talk about emotional eating, for some reason people think like you just broke up and you're going to eat ice cream. That's the obvious one. But there are many, many other types of conflict eating, I should call it, right? That like turning emotional pain to physical. If you eat so much, you're in physical pain. You are converting often emotional pain to physical pain. Then you're focusing on your physical pain and not your stomach ache and not your heartache, for example.
Right. So if we take this back to childhood, maybe we're doing what we're doing with food to get more love from the parent who might not have any more love to give. It might just be the person, you know, everyone has different parents. We all are, you know, everyone is unique. And sometimes you have a parent, might be a family that happened to be your dad or your mom. And I mean, this can happen, right? So
there are many reasons, but it's not just about you had a parent who couldn't give love. That is very obvious, right? That's boldly obvious. But a parent who wants the best for you and thinks you should be like a chemical engineer and doesn't see that you want to be an artist and thinks that you are like, you know, making a mistake and urges you not to be an artist and to become a chemical engineer, that is not a mean, bad parent, but that's a parent that's misattuned. And if someone who loves you is so misattuned, how do you deal with that? How do you become attuned to yourself? How do you listen to yourself? There are so many benign, big, terrible, awful things, but benign miscues or misattunement or trying to get you to be something you're not in a covert way can also leave deep wounds, and those affect how we expect other people to relate with us, how we relate with ourselves. And again, when people are not safe, food, which represents people in our psyche, is safe.
And then if things aren't going well, and if we're not able to kind of be perfect and have perfect bodies, then we could beat ourselves up and say, how could you not lose this last 5 pounds? You're so terrible, etc.
Well, I just want to point out that you just talk to yourself in second person language. How could you not lose the last 5 pounds? Rather than use the pronoun you when talking to ourselves, that often means that our inner critic is in charge of our voice, our thoughts. And when that inner critic is in charge of our thoughts, it makes us feel bad. And when we feel bad, we can't be both critical and kind to ourselves, so we use food to escape. So I would really watch the language you use, and instead of, you know, what's wrong with you that you can't lose that last 5 pounds, how about, what's going on with me that I'm not losing that last 5 pounds? What's stopping me? When you're curious, you are more likely to find answers. When you're critical, you just beat yourself up, you beat yourself down, you feel terrible, and then there's food to take you away from your own mean voice.
Right. So we would want to try to isolate that mean voice and we can be unconscious, right?
No, it's not unconscious. When you call yourself you, like that, that's something you can, on a practical level, say, wait, I'm calling myself you. Who's talking? Whose voice is that? Where did that voice come from? And say, would I say that to anybody else that I know? No, I would not. I'm going to talk to myself as I would someone I love. So this is not just theoretical. This is, okay, let's say that the you voice is some internalized version of the way you were spoken to, which is one way that we create that mean voice. The other way is when things are too loose and thing, you don't have enough structure in your life. Kids who don't have enough structure create the structure by creating like a mean, that mean voice. But let's say that you tried, the idea is to be like, that's not me. That's that person. I'm not going to talk to myself that way. I'm going to talk to myself as if I actually love and care about myself, consciously making different, taking different action.
Right. So we can say, I mean, because it could be very difficult for someone like myself to isolate the mean voice within me. So that's why I say it could be unconscious.
It's not difficult. You just have to listen for when you say you to yourself. You just said it, right? You said, how could you not lose that last 5 pounds? That was, if you set an intention to be aware and be aware and catch yourself using that second person pronoun when talking to yourself, you're going to be able to catch it. Unconscious is when it's completely out of our awareness, but not out of our operation. We don't know it, but it's affecting us. So now you know something.
Right.
You know that you're using, say, your father's critical voice towards yourself, which keeps you close to your father, but that's a whole other story. Now you know that. Now you can say, I'm going to really watch for that. I'm going to catch that second person pronoun. And when I catch myself using it, I'm going to say, not today, Dad.
Right. So I could basically challenge it, and I could say that this is not who I am anymore. I'd like to be different.
No, Josh. This is not who I am anymore. No. How about shut up?
Okay.
Shut the up. Wrong. I am perfectly imperfect, and you can just stop.
Right. But we've tried that and it hasn't worked. Otherwise,
I don't know who this we is, but you need to practice it more. You need to practice it. And that means over and over. But it also means you have to make your dad wrong about you. Oh,
I feel like I have to make myself wrong about myself.
No, you have to make the dad in you wrong. When you talk about myself, you're talking about his critical view of you. So you've got to heal the original wound, which is, from what I know from you calling the show, is you have some unresolved emotional trauma about a father who was critical and couldn't connect with you.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is that most likely my voice is going to be worse than my father ever was to me.
No, that's your father's voice. The mean voice is your father's voice.
But what I'm saying the child, go ahead.
So Josh, here's what you need to do. And I just have to say something to two people on Instagram. Hillary, I love that you are teaching that to those kids. That is awesome. That makes me so happy. And Valentin, how do I say shut the F up, Dad, in French? This I want to know. Okay. My friend's Instagram. Mean. Whose voice is that? That is the voice that you... Oh, my God. Zane is in the house. Here he is. Naturally, while I'm doing my show, he has to come say hello. Normally, 23 hours a day, he's asleep on the couch. I don't know what you want, Zane, but you can't be part of the show. Okay. Josh, when you say mean voice, the mean voice is a learned voice from probably your father, from what you've said.
And it's completely wrong. It's completely wrong.
Whose voice is that?
Well, it's my voice, and it's completely wrong.
Let me just go about it a different way. when we are treated either with overt or covert criticism, we are just not good enough as we are. That is either overt or covert. We get the idea that the way we feel is the reality, that if we feel bad, we are bad. If we feel not good enough, we are not good enough. And then that becomes our belief about ourselves. And then what starts out as relational, someone criticizing or judging you, becomes the way you think about yourself. Now you're judging you the way you were judged or criticized. And often we do it even worse and more harshly to ourselves. So when I say, when you speak to yourself in a cruel way, that is your dad. That means you learn, you identified with the way he treated you and saw you, and now that's how you see yourself. And that is the problem. And if you don't feel good about yourself, food always takes you away from that. And it's also easier to focus on what you're eating than on the fact that you have this unresolved, problematic, painful relationship with your dad that is both relational and internal.
Right. So that, I mean, it just shows you how wrong the voice is, because why would anyone ever be afraid of success? I mean, you just did a TED talk. Are you now saying, oh my God, I'm going to be in such bad condition? No, I mean, I'm lucky to even call you. Once that TED talk comes out, I won't even be able to call in. You'll be so busy. You know what I mean? So like,
what makes you say that?
You know,
always take your calls here, Josh.
Okay. Josh. But the voice makes no sense because it's contradictory. Why would anyone ever be afraid of success?
It's not logical. It's psychological. And I'm about to discuss that. So stay tuned. I'm going to go. And if you have any questions, you can call back or call me next week or call later today.
Yeah, I'll be listening in.
Okay. Thanks as always for your call. And Josh, if you wouldn't say something to someone you care about, don't say it to yourself. That what you just said to me was very nice, very lovely, very kind about my TEDx talk. How about you are equally as nice to yourself? What a concept.
We're not omniscient beings. We are imperfect.
Perfectly imperfect. So, but practice makes progress. So just think about how you would say something to anybody else. And if you wouldn't say it to anyone, say it yourself, voice above all.
Right. And don't have any fear of success on us now, since you're all successful. Okay. Bye.
Bye, Josh. Okay. So back to trying too hard. And again, Yoda, he says, try not. Do or do not. There is no try. So if I drop a pen, in fact, here's a Dr. Nina pen. Is my logo in there somewhere? Where is it? Dr. Nina pen. If I dropped it and I said, hey, try to pick up that pen, and you were actually with me, and I said, hey, try to pick up that pen, you either pick it up, or you don't, right? You can't try to pick up a pen. You can't just like try it. You either do it or you do it. You start dating, stop smoking, whatever it is. You either do it or you don't do it. So the same thing is with losing weight, stopping binging, which of course go together, because when you stop binging, you do lose weight if that's what you want. That's what you want. But whatever it is that you're trying to do, trying to be nicer to yourself, trying to be less critical, instead of trying to do it, you need to look at what's stopping you from meeting that goal. What is the obstacle? So it is usually one of two things. Either you're afraid of failure or you're afraid of success. So fear of failure usually has to do with our identity and our sense of self. Because you know what? There is a difference between failing and being, if you're doing or not doing, oh, I failed to do that, you know, or I failed that test, or, you know, whatever. And the other has to do with you as a person, right? I'm a failure means that you embody failure. I failed means you just didn't do something. So let's just say that, let's just talk about two imaginary people, Vicky and Victor. And they both apply for a job. They both apply for a dream job at Google. And neither of them gets it. So Vicky says, oh, I'm so bummed I didn't get that job. Hopefully I'll get the next one, right? And she goes on with her life. She applies for more positions and off she goes, right? Okay, next. She feels fine about herself. Just like, okay, I'm going to get that next one. Vic says that job. I'm a failure because I failed. I'm a loser. I suck at life. Now he's upset. He's calling himself a loser. He's calling himself a failure, which is just going to make him feel worse about himself. And what do you think might happen next? Well, maybe Victor will turn to food for comfort because he feels such shame about himself and he has no vocabulary or means to make himself feel better. So fear of failure is this pervasive sense of shame. It's not that you failed to achieve a goal, which is what failure is. You failed to achieve a goal. It's that you are a failure as a person. When you personalize failure, that's shame. And that's unbearable. It means there's something wrong with you. That's unbearable. And it is so unbearable that it might prevent you from making an effort in the first place. After all, if Victor didn't apply for the job, he would not have felt like a failure. So if you don't pursue what you want, there is no fear of failing. So if fear of failure is keeping you stuck, then it's important to challenge the idea that you are a failure if you fail. It's the same thing with all feelings. Like being angry doesn't make you, hello, Zane. Being angry doesn't make you an angry person. It makes you a person who's angry. And it's the same principle. If you fail, that is about your behavior and your actions. It is not about you. And it's very important to think about that. Ah, Zane, do not drink my tea. Oh my goodness. Oh yes, and your dog comes in and drinks your tea. Never a dull moment. Okay, so your 11-year-old son does that a lot. So that would be a great thing for you to talk about with him, the difference between failing, which we all fail. And by the way, then give him the Michael Jordan speech about failing, where he says, I failed over and over and over and over in my life. And then he talks about all the ways in which he has failed, all the games he lost because he had the final shot and he missed all the many, many, many failures he's had. And then he says he because of all of these failures, he is a success. Josh, some of us have unconscious guilt and some of us don't. Some of us have conscious guilt, but let me get to that another time. Maybe I'll answer that. Fear that may stop you is fear of success. Now, fear of success often has to do with worry about what's going to happen when you achieve your goal. And it's fearing that the result of your achievement will make things worse instead of better. And that has to do with expectations, impulsivity, objectification, and even, as I was talking about earlier, fear of happiness. And one more thing that I'll get to, maybe if we have time. Okay, so expectations. You may think that by stopping binging, by changing your body, by losing weight, whatever it is, that you were going to change your life. In fact, a lot of people think that. They'll say like, yes, my girlfriend broke up with me, my boyfriend broke up with me, but you know what? I'm going to get in such great shape. I'm going to so come back. Is lovable and likable and wanted is your appearance, which really sort of diminishes the other person, doesn't it? Makes them rather shallow. Just my opinion. Or this is an example I've talked about before. this woman in my support group was talking about how her sister was really, really intelligent, like a member of Mensa, just like super, super smart, genius level intelligence. And this woman was saying she wanted to lose weight so that she would become more intelligent like her sister. Her sister was thin and intelligent. And so she thought if she were thin, she'd also become more intelligent. Again, this isn't logical. This is psychological. So we have this fantasy often, oh, when we lose weight, we are going to do fun stuff. We're going to change our jobs. We're going to start dating. We're going to break up with someone. All of these ideas and all these expectations that are predicated on changing our appearance, our weight. But what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't? What if your life stays exactly the same? Maybe that level of disappointment would be too much to risk. Because as it might be less painful to think, oh, all I have to do is lose 20 pounds or 100 pounds or 5 pounds or whatever pounds it is that you think. All I have to do is stop binging and lose weight, and then I'm going to have the life that I want. But on some level, you know that that's not going to give you the life that you want. And it would be unbearable to think, oh, what now? As long as hope, right? As long as you don't get it, there's hope that if you got it, you could have it. But you also know that you can't. So this is why our minds are so interesting. It's not logical. An example of the woman who was told, hey, you know, you've got such a pretty face, you lose weight, you're going to have men lined up around the block. And she never dated. And she told herself, well, it's because of my weight. It's because of my weight. And she did lose weight. And she found it very hard to date and find a boyfriend. And she had to look at, well, maybe it wasn't because of her weight. Maybe there's something else she needed to look at. Or maybe it wasn't as easy as just losing weight. And boom, the boyfriend appears. What a superpower this would be. Like, if you could change your world by changing your, which is message, by the way. That's the message. They do a great sales job, but it is an illusion. Okay, so another reason for fear of success is fear of impulsivity. Maybe you're afraid that you will behave in an impulsive manner if you're happy with yourself. Maybe you're going to leave your husband or your wife or cheat on someone or take risks at work or that kind of thing. And if so, dealing with the wish to do those things, not the fear, is the most important step that you can take to change. My aunt was beautiful, but always overweight. And she used that as an excuse. And she died at 74, never having had an intimate relationship. Oh, while her brother, that is so sad. Oh my gosh. That is so tragic. Yeah. Fear can take us over. Fear of rejection, fear of loss. It can be so strong that it keeps us frozen. Frozen and stuck in our lives. And the whole idea is not to be stuck and frozen and just exist. The idea is to truly live. Truly, truly live. And by the way, truly living isn't based on the number on the scale. It really isn't. It really and truly is not. Will you be happier if the number on the scale changes? Yeah, but you might also be other things. You might be afraid of failure, gaining it back again, afraid of success. Now what? And I think, Josh, you said something earlier in the comment about religion. There's also a notion of suffering. And this is particularly true in some religions, that if we suffer, somehow it's noble to suffer. And as long as we are suffering because we are binging or we don't like our weight or we don't like some aspect of our lives, as long as we are suffering, somehow it appeases God. No one else will envy us. We are noble. We are good. We are safe. Let's challenge that idea. Feeling happy is simply being happy in this life. It is not noble to suffer. And a lot of people also tell me, hey, if I'm not suffering, I'm going to be arrogant. I'm going to be a bad person because, you know, I'm either suffering and noble or happy and arrogant. Well, guess what? Suffering and nobility, they don't go together. We've decided it's noble to suffer. Not true. Not true. And it is not arrogant to be happy. All right. So also another block to fear of success is objectification. This is particularly true of people who have been sexually abused or molested in their past. So, you know, think about, what are your associations to intimacy? What do you fear will happen if you're perceived as more attractive to others? And exactly, we learn how to be from Psychic Love Healing LA. We learn how to be from other people, and if they punish, we will punish. Exactly. We learn to relate to ourselves the way we are related to. So earlier, Josh, when I was talking to you, I know you're still here on Instagram. This is exactly what I was saying. If you have a critical parent self, so what is relational, a person being critical to you now becomes internal, intrapsychic it's called. Now you have internalized that critic, that inner critic, and now you're critical to yourself. And here's what's really terrible about this. In addition to now you make yourself feel bad and you can't criticize and uplift yourself at the same time. Doesn't work that way. So we often criticize ourselves, feel terrible, and then food takes care of us. But it has other ramifications, because if we're self-critical, for example, and someone comes along and they criticize us, it's like, oh, you know me so well. Yes, I'll have you in my life. Yeah, this is familiar. Hey, hi, come into my life. And then we tolerate treatment we should not tolerate. However, thank you for your being the voice of reason and being on board with this, and for helping other people do change their inner critic. So Cheryl, thank you for joining. The good news is there is hope that when we change our relationship with ourselves, when we turn that inner critic into a friend, then when someone judgmental and critical comes along, we are able to say, no, thank you. No, you're a jerk. You're a judgmental jerk. Be gone. You're not coming into my life. You're out. And when we're critical to ourselves and someone nice and loving comes along, we go, oh, too nice often. You're too nice. Why are you being so nice to me? Where's the bad boy? Where's the bad girl? Where's the person who's going to treat me terribly? Not good. Right? It has relational difficulty. And someone comes along and they're nice to us. We say, oh, this is good. Yes. Let's be together. Come into my life. Be my friend. Be my boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. Right? So our relationship with ourselves has everything to do with our relationships with others, with the world, and with food. Remember, food unconsciously in our psyche, it registers as relationship. Right? We talk about comfort food. We're really talking about a wish to be comforted. Food and relationship are kind of fused. And when people are unreliable, unpredictable, and unavailable, food is reliable, predictable, and available. Food can take care of us when we don't have the words to take care of ourselves. So goes, what? Are you on crack? I think actually 4 people have asked me that. Literally verbatim. Are you on crack? No, I'm not on crack. Yes, Josh, the examined life is full of amazing stories about patients in psychoanalysis who had transformation. So thank you for the reminder of that. Yes. Okay. So some years ago, there was a Special K ad that said, think of what you'll gain if you lose. Okay. So the fundamental problem I had with this was that it's supposed that you can only gain happiness if you lose weight. People, that is not true. Actually, this is only true. Wait, when you don't wait to be happy when you lose weight. Be happy and then you will lose weight. But as much as you may intellectually know this, is not the case that you're not going to gain happiness just because you lose weight. You may know that that may not be true, but you may unconsciously believe it. So if you're telling yourself you'll be happier once you lose weight, once you stop binging, once you, fill in the blank, but you never seem to be able to do that, you never seem to be able to get there, then maybe you're afraid to be happy. So again, who doesn't want to be happy? Of course, we all consciously want to be happy. But if we dig a little deeper, which is what we do in analytic or depth therapy, we realize that we're afraid. People are afraid of what happiness brings. Sometimes they have to actually have it. So the proverbial rug might be pulled out from underneath you. The other shoe will drop. It was too good to be true. We have all of these sayings that kind of point to the, ooh, if you're happy, watch out. Watch out. If you get happy, you're going to lose that happiness. But if you never step into paradise, you can't be kicked out. So maybe you have some negative associations to happiness, like what I was saying before. True artists must suffer. It's noble to struggle. It makes you a better person somehow. And that can translate into, well, you're a good person if you struggle, but you're a bad person. You're a bad person if you allow yourself to feel good. So these are ideas that you may have taken as truths without even thinking so much about them. Where did you get these ideas? And how are they keeping you trapped? Another reason people fear success has to do with the physiological experience of feeling good. Now, this is really interesting. I hope you'll find it as interesting as I do. If you've experienced trauma, having certain sensations in your body that can be really close to anxiety can be intolerable. And when I say it can be really close to anxiety, that means that feeling happy, excited, that feeling is very similar to the feeling of anxiety. Here's an example. So I have a friend who's an actor. She takes a lot of acting classes, and she is a wonderful actress, but she gets super nervous in auditions. And her actor, experience of anxiety and nervousness is nearly identical physiologically in our bodies to the experience of excitement, right? Heart goes a little bit. We feel that tingly feeling. We feel that that feeling. It's anxiety and it's also excitement. So he told her to remind herself when she felt nervous that she was actually excited about the opportunity to have the audition. Sounds good, right? Yeah, no, didn't really work out that way. Not so much. Because you can't talk yourself out of what you are feeling. Even if you tell yourself while you're feeling nervous, if you tell yourself, no, this is excitement. I'm really excited. I'm excited at this opportunity. No, it doesn't work that way. You cannot talk yourself out of how you feel, and you cannot talk yourself into a different way of feeling. This is why affirmations often do not work. So she's at auditions, which is a whole story about performance anxiety, and the casting director sort of represented her parents, who were never pleased. So often there are two people in the room when you go into a casting, now they're all like online, but used to be like there would be at least two people. She would walk in and she would unconsciously experience the casting directors as if they were her parents, kind of going like, yeah, I don't know, are you doing this right? And so she would get nervous. But she didn't know why until she knew why. When she realized, oh, the casting director sort of symbolized her parents who were never pleased. And here she's trying to get a job and she's going in front of people that she was afraid she wasn't pleasing. Of course she was getting anxious. But the principle she was taught is this: in excitement as anxiety. So you have to work through the original anxiety so you don't avoid the excitement of success, right? If you're avoiding the feeling of excitement and happiness because it kind of takes you to a place of anxiety, what was the original anxiety or anxieties? Another reason why all of these like intentions to stop binging, stop eating the wrong things, stop whatever, is that they're always about behavior. And what if you stop trying to change your behavior, but instead make kind of a resolution to change your relationship with yourself? Would you want to be kinder to yourself? Would you want to listen to what you need, what you want, you feel? Would you want to show up for yourself like a friend instead of a hateful, heartless critic? So changing behavior is about willpower if you only address the behavior. But if you don't address the underlying reasons for why you're binging or why you're eating something you don't want to eat or why you're not exercising when you also want to exercise, it's really difficult to change. You got to identify and process the underlying emotions, conflicts, needs, wants, everything that are leading to whatever's going on instead of addressing the behavior itself. Thoughts and beliefs lead to feeling, lead to behavior. If we only focus on behavior, that is like pulling a weed up without getting to the root and thinking it's going to be gone forever. So focus on weight image. That just takes you away from you, from what you are thinking, what you feel, what you want, what you don't want, what you need. Instead, focus on that. Focus on what is going on inside and find a way to be present with yourself and to give yourself what you need. And guess what? When you do that, when you give yourself comfort words, for example, you don't need comfort food. So that is all about fear of success and fear of failure. And Josh, there is a voice is saying there's a voice inside us that is completely wrong. The idea is to get that voice out. I say that my work is like a psychological exorcism, which is very funny coming from a nice Jewish girl that I am. Psychological exorcism. That we want to take that voice, which is not us. It is a learned voice, and exorcise it, get it out of our heads. And when we get it out of our heads and we can be truly ourselves and kind to ourselves, then we don't need food to escape or numb or express or anything else. So that is that for today. Thank you all so much for being with me here. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, except I will not be here next week. I'm taking the week off. So I will not see you next week, but I will see you in 2 weeks. And with rare exceptions, I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio and Instagram. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. Just look for The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And if you like the show, please head over to Apple and give me a rating and or a review. The more it shows up in searches and the more people I and we, because this is a collective effort, isn't it? The more people we can reach. Thank you, everybody. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.